You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to another new episode here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. On today's show, on this Thursday, August 22nd, to help break down the Rockets offseason to date and the latest news and rumors connected to the team, I'm joined by a new guest. You probably know him already. He's Mike Meltzer, longtime Houston sports radio host and a guy I consider to be a personal friend. Mike, thanks for coming on the show. How's it going?
Ben, I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing quite well. It's an easier time of year with not so much Rockets news. It's kind of the vacation, if you will, for NBA media people. So it's nice to have a slightly slower pace than in July. And actually, Mike, I'll start. When was your last day at the old job?
My last day was, I'm looking at the calendar right now, July 18th, which was a Thursday. So it's been like, I guess a little bit over a month or so. Yeah, July 18th.
That's what I thought. So it was right after the Westbrook trade, but before the press conference and everything else.
That's correct. It was actually, I remember the Westbrook trade happened the week before, also on a Thursday, so the 11th. And I distinctly remember this because I was at a yoga class and I finished it. I go to my car, and one of my worst habits, I don't know if you have this, is I check my Twitter when I get into my car after something. Yep. And I just kind of scroll. And then I happen to go into my car and check my Twitter account as Woj had tweeted out the Russell Westbrook Chris Paul trade. And it was like one of those tweets where I was like, hold on a second. Is this the Adrian Wojnarowski? Like, is this the verified account? Am I reading these names correctly? So all that kind of stuff. So that happened 1 week before.
Yeah, I'll never forget either because it was the dorkiest gathering. We had gotten together, I think there were about 30 of us or so, just diehards, to watch a Rockets Summer League game. We had actually 10 minutes before the trade, you know, we had talked about the hypothetical. A lot of us were kind of so-so, lukewarm.
Oh, yeah. And we had talked about it on the radio, earlier that week, obviously, because the Paul George thing had gone down. And so now the specter of Westbrook being available was actually out there. And I initially wasn't really a huge fan of it. Now, this is at the time, bear in mind, when we were thinking, like, all right, can they just, like, trade Westbrook without giving up Chris Paul? And right. I was thinking, well, I just think that's too many ball-dominant guys. Like, I don't know what that's really getting them. Obviously, the trade that went down, you know, involved Chris Paul. And it's one of those deals that I think takes a little bit of time to fully, like, digest to see what everybody's take is.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what, you know, I was trying to get to because, you know, that night, the only person who was on board was Matt Thomas, of course, 790 host, Rockets PA guy. He was there. Even before the trade, he was actually pushing Westbrook as an idea that he was okay with. And, of course, then it happened. Matt had a lot of fun at our expense. The rest of the party, which was much less, at least initially, enthusiastic about the trade. Now it's been a month. Of course, we've heard Westbrook in the press conference. And definitely on my part, but I think really the Rockets fan base as a whole, there's been a lot of moderation. There's been a lot of coming around. So, you know, that's what I wanted to get your take on relative to what your, you know, immediate aftermath, your takes in the first few days afterward. Have your views modified at all now that there's been a month? And if so, how?
Well, it's split in my mind because ultimately what I question is this going to be the move that gets the Rockets over the hump and leads them to a championship? If I was a betting man, I'd say probably not. But that's probably a function of just how talented the league is and how much competition there is out there. I hope I'm wrong about this part. I just have some doubts about whether this is going to be the combination that leads the Rockets to their next championship. Now, having said that, even with that, Ben, there are some like really big legitimate positives about this trade, even though I feel that way. And one of them, which I was thinking about even the night of the trade, is, okay, we all know James Harden the last 5-6 years, but especially the last 2 or 3, has taken on this almost unimaginable load in the regular season that you basically saw no way to really curtail moving forward. Now you've got a way to do that with Russell Westbrook, because Westbrook's a guy who rings the bell. He's almost always healthy. He's very durable. He plays hard. He's one of the few players who can legitimately take that load off of James Harden. I think that's a huge positive. I also think another big positive is just in terms of the finances of it. You know, I really, really, really like Chris Paul, but you're basically almost backdating the money in a way, in that, all right, Chris Paul's 34, Westbrook's 31, and you're basically working on kind of a similar, in a way, timeline as far as the next 3 years. So instead of dealing with a 34-year-old who, even though I like Chris Paul, he's probably not going to stay healthier moving forward. Now all of a sudden you get a guy kind of in his prime, maybe more on the other side of the prime, but still, you know, 31 years old in Westbrook. And I guess the other thing would be also that if this thing is going to work, then I think you have the perfect coach to make this work in Mike D'Antoni, because I think that if you look at all the coaches in the league, like, who's better at figuring things out, especially offensively, when things might be challenging, than Mike D'Antoni?
That's a good point. And one of the ways that my view has modified, I think, from my initial reaction to it, I was listening to Matt Moore, a.k.a. HP Basketball on Twitter, on a podcast recently, and he explained that his view is that the Rockets with Westbrook relative to the Rockets with Chris Paul have a higher floor but a lower ceiling. And that's kind of an interesting take, because when you watch Westbrook from afar, because so much of his game depends on, you know, in a given night, is he hitting his jumpers, he seems like, you know, in terms of the level of his individual performances, that there's a lot of volatility. And so you would think of him at first glance, not really watching him, as kind of a high ceiling, lower floor. But in terms of the impact on a team, it might be the opposite. What Matt meant by that is that with Chris Paul, at least the version from his first year in Houston, maybe with Westbrook, there are enough questions with regards to his shooting, his ball dominance, that the fit is never quite as perfect as the first year of Chris Paul and James Harden. So maybe you can't recapture that 65-win form when they're up 3-2 on the Warriors before the hamstring. Maybe you never get all the way back to that level. Now, the flip side is maybe you don't need to, since the Warriors aren't the Warriors anymore. But what Matt was arguing, and now that there's been a month, I think I've come around on this point, and I think you were arguing this as well, is that with Westbrook's durability, with the fact that he's out there so much, with the fact that he should probably keep you from any drastic drop in Harden's performance because you're asking him to do too much, or maybe Harden gets hurt, your floor is just a lot higher because simply the talent when you have Harden and Westbrook out there is so overwhelming that it's kind of tough to conceive the Houston Rockets winning below 55 games as long as those two guys are healthy and out there.
When you first mentioned that, I was kind of thinking, well, that sounds kind of weird. But then as you explained it, that actually does make a lot of sense. And part of it is that, I mean, let's be honest, like the Rockets, let's see, the Rockets, the first year of Chris Paul, like that honestly may have been, that could have been their best team of all time, hypothetically. Like, and people may not like to hear that, but I think you especially know what I mean when I say that, in that if you take that team and you transplant it over, let's say, 30 NBA years, like that team might have won in those 30 years, like 20 or 23 of those championships, wherever the number might be. And so when you say, okay, the ceiling, is lower with Russ and James than the first year of James and Chris, it sounds critical, but then you're like, well, wait a second, that team won 65 games, right? They were the top seed over the Warriors. Like, that's a really high ceiling to reach. So the way you explain it, I think, makes complete sense to me. And they did need some sort of buffer. Just like the Chris Paul health thing was going to be a problem moving forward. And I consider myself a big Chris Paul fan and defender, but I'm also very cognizant of just the way age affects athletes. And there's no way I can honestly tell people if Chris Paul's playing 58 games every single season that he's going to play more games next season, or think about the 2 years after, which to me was like really, really the cliff that they were staring down with that contract, which they now don't have to worry about with Russell Westbrook. And the other thing I wanted to add, because I left out something in my first explanation. I think the other big thing that they have going for them with this combination of Harden and Westbrook is the dynamic that both guys wanted this to happen. James Harden wanted Russell Westbrook. Clearly, you saw that in the press conference. You've seen that with what, you know, Jonathan Fagan has written in the Chronicle and other stuff. Westbrook wanted to be here. I think that's something that you cannot underestimate when you have two future Hall of Famers, two MVPs, and they actually want to make this work. I think that is very, very critical, especially with these questions about how they're going to use one guy or the other off the ball.
This is Locked on Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today we're joined by Mike Meltzer. I want to continue our discussion where we left off at the end of segment one about Westbrook and Harden, specifically the fact that one has to play away from the ball. We started by looking at it from kind of a 30,000-foot view, how this is going to work. And now in terms of the actual X's and O's, this is another way that I've modified a little bit over the past month. When you look, Mike, at James Harden and Russell Westbrook, and typically, you know, two ball-dominant players when they come together in the NBA, the majority of times it seems like the guy who's a better shooter, which in this case is clearly Harden, is the fit to play off the ball a bit more, just at a very superficial level. However, in this case, a lot of smart basketball guys over the past month that I've seen weigh in on this topic seem to think that Westbrook is the better candidate. Harden's a better pick-and-roll guy. Westbrook has an ability to cut away from the ball. It's something he did in Oklahoma City. Daryl Morey actually pointed out that Westbrook mentioned it unsolicited in his press conference, introductory one in Houston, saying that he wanted to get back to cutting away from the ball. So maybe this is a situation like, you know, LeBron James in Miami, in which even though Wade's not a great shooter, he was able to play off the ball. So when you look at these two, Harden and Westbrook, obviously one of them's going to have to be the guy that more often than not brings the ball up the court. Are you sold on, I guess what I'm seeing as the more conventional argument, that James Harden is still the primary ball handler and that Westbrook can play off the ball?
I'm not fully sold on it, but it does make a lot of sense, especially when you make that LeBron-Wade comparison. I think that, like, if you're arguing that Harden should have the ball more, which I think he will anyway, just because, you know, he's the franchise guy. If you're arguing that, I think the LeBron-Wade parallel is a good one, because obviously LeBron is, well, LeBron's not a great shooter. I think he's a more dangerous shooter than Wade is, obviously. Yes. But, you know, LeBron is basically like the queen, and so you want him, like, controlling all the action on the court, which is why Miami had that happen. I can see that. I'm also wondering, like, okay, with the Rockets analytics and everything, and I realize the numbers are what they are, like, Westbrook might, like, is probably, like, the worst high-volume three-point shooter in the history of the NBA. But I do wonder, like, as they go through all those stats and really deep dive, like, are they going to pick out some spots on the floor where they want Westbrook taking more threes versus others? That's another thing I've been thinking about over the last 3 to 4 weeks. Like, that's one. But that does make sense to me, that you have Westbrook being able to cut, being able to do different things. I'm looking forward to the fact that he is able to add a certain rebounding dimension, which I think especially hurt them in the Warriors series in the second round. And ultimately, I do think that D'Antoni's going to implement, like, some level of the, all right, the last 2 years, we were all wondering, how are James and Chris going to play together? Well, one of the ways that they accomplished it was sort of like, not even answering the question, but just kind of like playing these guys, splitting up the minutes, and kind of doing it in a way where they didn't, if this makes sense to you, and I think it probably does, where they kind of like hand it off like a little bit. Mm-hmm. And they let Chris Paul run the offense when Harden was on the bench. And I think that they'll do some of that. And I think especially they're going to be cognizant this year of, okay, Harden's had this major workload over the course of the last, especially three regular seasons. Let's work to get James off the ball a little bit more, not even necessarily just because of the offense, but also because we want to conserve his energy to some extent during the regular season to save him more for the postseason.
Let me ask you a question about the fit of guys around Westbrook and Harden. One of the debates that the Rockets haven't commented on publicly, but Kelly Eco, a few other guys have reported that internally they're considering it, is starting Daniel House at the three, a bigger guy, more defensive oriented than Eric Gordon, who I don't think they ever viewed as their long-term three. He just kind of went in that mold after they lost Trevor Ariza last summer. Yeah. And, of course, James Ennis never really worked out. Now that you have Westbrook, who's more athletic, he's more of a rebounder, does that allow you to still go with a smaller three, an Eric Gordon type? Or do you think that maybe this is the catalyst for them going back to a bit more conventional in terms of how they configure their lineup at the forward spots?
I would be good with the idea of starting House, because my philosophy has kind of been, I like the idea of having a really explosive score off the bench. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of like, the, you know, if you look historically, like a, so like what the Spurs obviously have had with Ginobili the last, you know, eight or so years of his career. And I just think, I like the idea of like, all right, you know, a couple of, let's say 5-6 minutes into a game, you're bringing someone off the bench who's got a ton of firepower like Gordon does. So that's something that I'd be definitely willing to experiment with, especially because, you know, when you look at this team, Daniel House is one of those guys who you say, okay, if the Rockets are going to maximize whatever they're going to be this upcoming season, then they need certain things to happen. And one of those things they need to happen is for Daniel House to get better, right? And get more consistent offensively. Like, this is a guy who I thought showed some real flashes, obviously, during the season and even the first round against Utah. And then things kind of fell apart against the Golden State Warriors. But you can see the talent is there. You can see, you know, from a, you know, essentially from a shooting standpoint, obviously from a height weight standpoint, that's somebody who can be a legit small forward in the NBA, but you feel like he's not quite there. So I would be open to that because in a way you kind of feel like, okay, Westbrook, Harden, Gordon might be overkill early in the game until you have to play them, obviously, in the fourth quarter to close things out. So I'm good with that idea, yes.
The other interesting thing, when we talk about a closing lineup, which I agree, especially against really good defenses, you probably need Westbrook, Harden, and Gordon together. Lots of playmaking. Also, Gordon helps space the floor all the way out to 27, 28 feet.
Yep.
One of the interesting things that when I look back at this entire offseason, Westbrook, Gordon, obviously there's a scenario where none of these guys are in Houston. The same applies for Clint Capella, because we all know that plan A for the Rockets, and they did not even know that the Westbrook path was an option until Paul George went to the Clippers with Kawhi Leonard. That was July 6th. The Rockets pivoted really well. But when I look back at really the entire offseason as a whole, one of the interesting alternate realities to me is, what if the Rockets were to succeed with their plan A, which was Jimmy Butler? Clearly, Daryl Morey was given at least some signals that Butler had interest in Houston. Would that have happened, you would have had to send Eric Gordon and Clint Capella out. That's the only way the math would have worked. So it basically would have been like a three-person trade. Whereas now you have Westbrook, Gordon, and Capella in this alternate reality in which they get Jimmy Butler. You have Jimmy Butler, you have Chris Paul, and you have whatever center to replace Capella that you could have gotten for like $5 million, which in the grand scheme is not all that much. I know that the Rockets are a very smart organization, but when I look at this, it's hard for me not to think that plan B, Westbrook, Gordon, and Capella. Now, I know there's some uncertainty with the Gordon contract after this year, but at least at face value, when you look at talent, I tend to think that the way things ended up, even though it wasn't by design, they got a little bit lucky with the Paul George situation, but Westbrook, Gordon, and Capella to me feels like a better end result for the Rockets and their championship odds next year than Butler, Chris Paul, and a $5 million center. Are you with me on that argument?
Ben, I'm with you on that. And I know that might be controversial. And I respect Jimmy Butler as a player, but and obviously he's a better player than Eric Gordon, a guy who's got a higher ceiling, and these are things that we all know. But I also think that Gordon is a guy who has been a really vital player for this team. And you look at the last two playoff series losses to Golden State, and one consistent theme on a positive has been that Eric Gordon, I think, has played really well against Golden State. Like, he has, I think he has rung the bell for this basketball team in the postseason. And I think replacing him would have been tougher than people think, because a lot of people, you know, obviously listeners of this podcast are going to know fully what Gordon brings to the table, but maybe nationally or in some places locally, like, people focus on the offense. But this is a guy who does help you out defending different guards, especially what he was able to do against Donovan Mitchell in the first round of the playoffs last year. That's something that Eric Gordon is able to do. And I know Capella has become a very polarizing and controversial figure, but I just think that someone who's that young, and maybe he's reached his ceiling, as some of my former coworkers feel like he has, but I still hold out hope that there's more there as someone who's 25. And at the very, very, very least, I certainly think that Clint Capella can play way better than the way that he played in the second round against the Golden State Warriors. So with what Gordon brings to the table and just the fact that it kind of keeps your roster from a cap situation more manageable, and the fact that I think Capella would have been much tougher to replace than people think, I'll take Plan B over Plan A.
Final segment here at Locked On Rockets on this Thursday, August 22nd. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today, we're joined by Mike Meltzer, longtime Houston sports radio host. Mike, we spent the last couple of minutes of our second segment looking at the Eric Gordon situation, his fit in the lineup, also this alternate reality scenario in which you land Jimmy Butler, but Eric Gordon goes out, why I think both of us are in agreement that the way things ended up, Westbrook, Gordon, Capella being a better fit than that scenario with Jimmy Butler, Chris Paul, and whatever centers on the open market. The other interesting dynamic going on right now with Eric Gordon is that over the next month, and this is something that probably before training camp, one way or another, they're going to try to resolve, is whether you can extend him. He's going into the final year of his contract, and for that matter, P.J. Tucker, who's not going into the final year of his contract, he's got 2 years left, but he also said this week that he wants an extension. So I want to get your take on whether one, both, or neither of these makes sense. Quickly for our audience, a reminder, these are two different situations. Tucker obviously has 2 years left on his contract rather than one in the case of Gordon, but with Tucker, he wants an extension. Well, number one, he's 34 years old, so he probably wants some financial security. And then the final year of his deal, which is a year from now, less than half of it is fully guaranteed, so he probably wants a little more long-term stability, so there's a financial incentive. The upshot for the Rockets is that with Tucker, the maximum value he can get is 3 years, $30 million, or 2 years, about $20 million, 1 year, $10 million. Basically, that's correlated to his prior contract, in which he's been earning about $8.5 million per season. He signed that in July of 2017. And also, you can't go 4 years with Tucker because then you'd come into complications with the age 38 rule. So at least from a value perspective, when you look at Tucker, a good starter, a quintessential 3-and-D guy at the power forward spot, when you're looking at a guy that gives you that level of production, $10 million a year in the current NBA salary cap world, that's a pretty good figure. The only issue for the Rockets, as I see it, is whether you want to commit that much long-term to a guy who's already under contract through age 36. Gordon, it's a little bit different in that Gordon, 4 years, $76 million is his maximum extension. That's because he's been here. This is going to be his fourth season. It's correlated to his prior contract, which was 4 years, $54 million. That's a lot longer and larger than the 4 years, $32 million, well, the same length, but a much larger figure, so Gordon can get a larger extension. And the negative with Gordon, it's not so much that it doesn't make sense. He's just 30 years old. He's a lot younger. But if he gets the maximum extension, if he's holding out for that, and he might be because next year's free agent class is really weak, if you give Gordon 4 years, $76 million, which is his max to extend him before the season, then you're paying him nearly $20 million a year, and that's for a player who's going to be the fourth or fifth best player on your roster. That might be a whole lot to ask Tillman Fertitta to swallow, when the reality is that you could probably get someone to give you maybe 75% of Eric Gordon's value at 50% of the cost. So as I see it, that's kind of the framework of this. With Tucker, the dollars and cents will certainly make sense. It's just a matter of whether it makes logical sense for the Rockets at his age or what it will be. With Gordon, I think it's more a question of how much is Tillman Fertitta willing to pay. Clearly, both of these guys are willing to extend. That's why in their interviews, they brought it up as an option. They're okay with the financial parameters, but I just see two different kind of calculus at play when it comes to sorting out whether it's logical for the Rockets to do that. So Tucker, Gordon, are you ready to extend one, both, or neither of those guys?
Okay, here's how I'm going to answer that. So first of all, I think this is a really tough question because of basically everything that you have outlined. If you ask me, gun to my head, I think that they will ultimately not give an extension to either guy for a few reasons. And well, the main reason, honestly, is just being age, salary cap. And plus, when I look at P.J. Tucker, and listen, we all love P.J., right? He's the heart and soul of the team. But, like, in any sport, unless you're talking about a franchise quarterback, like, I'm not going to be too excited or, you know, some real, like a James Harden-level player. Like, I'm not going to be excited to give a guy an extension when he's got 2 years left in his contract. To me, if I'm an organization, like, the Rockets made a really strong and good move 2 years ago by signing P.J. Tucker to that mid-level exception. And they should reap the benefits of it. Like, I don't want to be sitting here renegotiating it when this is I want to bear the fruit of the significant accomplishment of bringing PJ Tucker in here 2 years ago. And with Gordon, I just think the tough thing is, I look at it this way. Like, Eric Gordon's 30 years old. His contract, like Tucker's, has been, I would say, almost wildly successful in Houston. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the scope of his NBA career, I remember when I was at the press conference 3 years ago when they introduced Gordon and Ryan Anderson, and then they surprisingly brought down James Harden from upstairs, yep, to give him that extension, that whole deal. I remember, I don't know if it was at the press conference or just the talk around the time, but the feeling was, hey, the Rockets have looked at Eric Gordon's injury history and they feel like they figured out some kind of program, whatever, to be able to keep him healthy. And to their credit, they have been able to do that. Eric Gordon's played 75, 69, and 68 games. So he's been durable. He's been someone who's been able to stay on the court. And what I worry, not as a pessimist, but as a realist, okay, that's Eric Gordon from age 27 to age 30. That's what I bought. Mm. Now, when you mentioned $76 million, I got to buy Eric Gordon essentially from age 31 to age 35. And I just think it would be surprising if he was able to stay that consistently healthy as he ages out of his prime. And so ultimately, that's why I'd be surprised, unless they can do it on a really reasonable figure, if they would give him $76 million, unless, of course, like, they win the championship and it's like, okay, we're just going to, you know, keep this thing together and it's all fine. So ultimately, what I would bet on right now is not giving either guy an extension. That's what I would bet on now.
And it is worth noting that the Rockets have bird rights to both of these guys. So some of the, yep, framing, you know, clearly the players, and especially their agents, they want to make it seem like that, well, the Rockets, one way or another, they have to make this decision. Now, the reality is they can let these guys become free agents, Gordon in July 2020, Tucker in July 2021, and still keep them, exceeding the cap to do so, because they have their bird rights. So this isn't a situation in which the Rockets, even if they do keep them long term, have to do it now. It's an option, but I'm with you in that there's more of a case to let them go to the end of their contract. There's also the option you could consider, depending on how the season goes, trading a guy like Gordon at the deadline if you think, yep, that you're not going to be able to re-sign him in the offseason. But yeah, because you have his bird rights, you can re-sign him when he's a free agent, just as they did this summer with Austin Rivers, Daniel House. Well, they didn't have bird rights on those guys, but it's still the same theme in that even though they're free agents, you were able to keep them, and it'd be even easier to do so with Gordon and Tucker. Mike, last subject for you, and this will be broad, 30,000-foot view. I want to circle back to the way you began the podcast, talking about your skepticism that the Rockets will win a title in the Harden-Westbrook era. Now, some of it, especially in season one, and, you know, Harden turns 30 years old next week, Westbrook turns 31 later this year, so clearly their best chance is sooner rather than later. And just from an odds standpoint, obviously, any one season, it's less than 50-50. Well, unless you're like the Warriors and you have a comedic advantage. Unless it's a situation like that, you're always less than 50-50. That's the reality. And then, you know, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Jazz, the Bucks, there's some other really good teams out there. I suppose the Sixers can be thrown in as well. But beyond that, just explain your skepticism. I know you're not so much counting them out. I think some of it's just logistically trying to look at the odds of this. But from a 30,000-foot view perspective, what your skepticism is over this era, this iteration of the Rockets, and whether they can do what, say, the last couple of years they weren't able to.
Yeah, I would say looking at this team, I think that they'll be in good shape in the regular season, particularly because they have guys who have been able to, knock on wood, like Harden and Westbrook, stay healthy, whereas some of these teams in the West, like, all right, the Lakers with LeBron, like, what's going to be LeBron's deal in the regular season? Heck, what's Anthony Davis' deal going to be in the regular season also? And then the Clippers, while they're going to be the odds-on favorite to win, I don't think it's overwhelming. And plus,
no,
the Raptors just won the title with Kawhi playing, what, 60 basketball games. So it's not like Kawhi Leonard is going to play 82 games. And so I think the Rockets should, from a seeding standpoint, even though the West is so competitive, end up in a good spot. I think ultimately, the way I would frame it is this, and I hope I'm wrong on this, but when you look at, you know, let's, all right, I'm looking at trying to win 16 games in the playoffs to win the NBA championship. And between all the competition in the West and whatever team comes out of the East, I think ultimately, you know, the weaknesses of the Harden-Westbrook dynamic, and specifically like Westbrook shooting and some of his playoff struggles, I think ultimately they will not have enough to win 16 games against that level of competition. Now, I hope I'm wrong on that. And it's not, and I'm focusing on like these two guys. It's really, it's obviously like a lot of other things that are mixed in. Like Clint Capella's got to get better. You have to have your role players stay healthy. And some guys get better, like Daniel House and players like that. Maybe you get a surprising performance. But ultimately, I think that it's going to be a little bit too deep for them to ultimately win the NBA championship. But yeah, even when I'm saying this, I'm also like reflecting on the last couple of years and thinking, okay, well, it's not like there's one specific team that stands out as, man, the Rockets are going to have a really tough time beating this team, because there is no Golden State Warriors anymore. So there's not that one team that I can honestly tell your audience that, hey, and obviously, especially before these games are being played, because a lot of this is on spec. We don't know what the Lakers will look like. We don't know what the Clippers are going to actually look like. We don't know what some of these teams are going to look like. You know, the Bucks obviously lost Malcolm Brogdon this offseason. So we don't know how some of these teams are going to look. So the best thing the Rockets have going for them is that Westbrook is healthier, more durable than Chris Paul, and the Warriors, at least in the fashion they were the last 3 years, do not exist anymore.
Is there one area that, you know, if you're Daryl Morey, is there something that would keep you up at night in terms of a need, or is it just overall depth? We've heard them connected to Andre Iguodala, wing defense. Is it more just a matter of overall talent, or is there a specific deficiency that you see when you look at their current roster?
Well, here's what I need, and I don't know if this is a direct answer to your question, but it's a point I definitely wanted to make on this podcast, is I think Clint Capella is a gigantic topic heading into this season, because if I'm Clint Capella, I would have been and will continue to approach this offseason as if I am the reason why my team did not beat Golden State. I think that is the appropriate mentality to take, and I don't think that's too far away from the truth. I was looking at, I don't know if it was Red 94 or somebody who had an issue a few weeks ago with D'Antoni continuing to play Capella against Golden State.
Yep.
And I actually disagreed with that in my mind. I didn't tweet about it because I'm thinking, listen, Clint Capella is a young guy. He's paid a lot of money. If you lose because Clint Capella is not nearly good enough against Golden State, I will actually live with that, because he should take the onus on that. Like, he should take the blame.
I agree.
And I'm not saying that in an overly critical way. It's just that, like, hey, I'm comfortable losing as long as one of my four or five best players fails. I just think that that's the way that sports is. I don't want to lose with my 10th guy failing. So I think that makes sense in my mind. And so Capella, listen, Clint Capella is 25 years old. If this guy actually had a jump shot, he'd be one of the best players in the league. I think we all understand that. But he can play way better than he played against the Golden State Warriors. He should be able to outplay Kevon Looney. And he is somebody who needs to, I think, frankly, get a little bit tougher, maybe physically, mentally, whatever the situation might be. But I've always believed in Capella's talent. I feel like I've always been in his corner, and he let a lot of people down with the way he played in the postseason. That's something that absolutely needs to get better. And I hope that he's been approaching this offseason with the mindset of, like, you know what? People are going to blame other people for Golden State, especially nationally. They might blame James Harden for whatever reason. They might blame Chris Paul for not playing well in the first five games. It's on me. I'm the reason why this team was not able to overcome Golden State. He needs to get better. And it's not the only question involving this team, but when you have a team that has a lot of older guys, I think it's very reasonable to say, hey, here's a 25-year-old player who's very athletic, who fits very, very well here. He's probably in his absolute best situation playing with the Rockets, and he needs to take full advantage of that situation.
Great take. I completely agree with that. That's something circling back really to the end of the Warriors series, but I'm on your side rather than Red 94, in that I understand where he's coming from, but yeah, you want to lose with your best guys, and it's easier to stomach that loss than it is if you're turning to the number 9 or 10 guy on the roster. Anyway, Mike, final issue. Obviously, we know you haven't been on the air, unfortunately, for a month now. You're also a U of H law graduate. Just tell our people, I know you've got a lot of fans listening, what's next for you? What's on your agenda?
Good question. So once I was let go on July 18th, I immediately had a couple things I had to tie up in Houston. I am still in Houston, by the way, so just to make that clear, and I want to remain here. And then one good thing coming out of that, well, I'm sure there are probably a few things, but I was able to take a vacation. I went to Turks and Caicos with my family for 9 days, which was great. And I'm kind of exploring opportunities between some broadcasting stuff, possibly some law stuff. I'm kind of honestly open to anything at this point. This is the first time I'm really talking about it publicly for obvious reasons. But I also, so to answer your question, like, actually tangibly, I'm working on some broadcasting stuff, which hopefully is going to work out. I'm just kind of working out some technological things with some places. So that's on the broadcasting front. Also, I will be, like everybody seems to be these days, coming out with a podcast.
Oh, there you go.
Now, it might be titled the Mike Meltzer Podcast, but I actually have a very specific angle to this podcast, which is not going to be just like me talking into a microphone, but I think I have something a little bit different and unique. I'm not ready to announce it yet. I'm like in the process of cobbling together all of my equipment, which will be arriving very shortly, and I'll announce it on social media like once I get the first episode up and ready. But I have missed producing content, and that will be starting to happen very, very shortly.
Perfect. Sounds good. I look forward to listening because I've been a big fan of yours for a while and glad to finally get you on the program. Mike, thanks so much for the time. And folks, if you're not following him already, you can do so at Mike Meltzer on Twitter. Mike, thanks so much for joining us, man.
Ben, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Good stuff there with Mike Meltzer, and that's where we will break things on this Thursday, August 22nd. Thought we covered a lot of ground, and that's enough for one day. Let's leave some things for the days ahead as we continue to review the Rockets' offseason to date. I don't think it's done. There's a possibility. Certainly, it sounds like they'll be adding Terrence Jones, but we know, as mentioned a few minutes ago, they are monitoring the Andre Iguodala situation. I don't think this roster is completely final just yet, so we will have a lot more news, at least some, to discuss in the weeks ahead before training camp begins in late September. And who knows? Maybe there's some bigger moves that shake free as well. Regardless, though, we'll certainly review what we've learned to date. There's so many angles to this offseason, the addition of Russell Westbrook, potential extensions for Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker, and of course, we'll try and break it down here at Locked On Rockets, and I'll try to continue getting some really good guests, just like Mike Meltzer, in the days and weeks ahead. Anyway, for today, this is where we leave off. As always, I appreciate you guys so much for tuning in, and if you want more content before our next episode, the best place to get it is on Twitter, where I'm on there at Ben Dubose, Mike is on there at Mike Meltzer, both of those simply are names, and then the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Beyond that, we've got a website, LockedOnRockets.com, Facebook account, Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of those are ways you can access prior content, you can ask me questions about the team, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being, please don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Also, you can subscribe to the show, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya, so many places. We've got a great distribution lineup because of the Locked On Podcast Network, so if you're not already subscribing, please do. That's how you can get episodes delivered straight to your inbox even before I post them to my aforementioned Twitter timeline, and we get the benefit with your subscription, and hopefully, if you're kind enough to leave a 5-star review, with making us look attractive, our numbers to prospective advertisers, and keeping the business model rolling as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. With the plugs complete, this is where we break. I'm Ben Dubose. He's Mike Meltzer. Thanks so much for taking the time to listen to us today. And please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.